Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 49 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And our title for this particular podcast is Do You Rayudu? And that's because we'll be talking about the life and times of Ambati Rayudu, who, Jared, was a child prodigy, an elite player of spin, an under-19 captain. He has 6 IPL titles to his name, which is the most for any cricketer alongside Rohit Sharma. Yet he only played 55 ODIs for India, also averaging 47 with the bat, which is quite impressive. Can you think of any other cricketer who has a similar arc to Rayudu's?
Ooh, it's interesting. I remember one of the reasons I wanted to do this is because me and Barrett were talking one day, and he said, and he called him great. And I was like, well, how can he be great? Because he hasn't achieved all that much at international level. But you could make a very good claim that he is the one of the best players ever to not have done much at international level, right?
Yeah.
And then you start throwing in all the different things and, you know, what happened to him in under 19 cricket, politics at home, the ICL and everything else. Like, I don't think there really has been another, you know, Ambati-like player that is out there. So, you know, you go back to even, yeah, under 19 games and, you know, that incredible game against England where he gets them down, what he made 177 out of 300 or whatever it was. Like, he really was a different level of player. And yet, internationally, we barely saw him. And when he was probably on the edge of perhaps his biggest chance to actually, you know, make something of himself as an international player, they dropped him. So he's a remarkably weird player, I think. I do think he's almost a one-of-one type guy when you look at it that way.
Yeah, and we're obviously going to tackle his entire story, and I'm going to go in chronological order. So let's rewind the clock to all the way back to 2002, when a 17-year-old Ambati Rayudu smashed a double century and then another 100 for Hyderabad versus Andhra Pradesh in a Ranji game. And by doing that, he became the youngest Indian to achieve that feat. And that was also in just his second season of senior cricket. So the fact that he was labeled as a prodigy came as no surprise, really.
No, look, he came through very early on and everyone knew who he was. Those two innings, I suppose. But that game certainly changes things quite early on. And, you know, from there is in the under-19 setup. So this is not like a case of hidden talent or anything. It was right there in front of you.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, he literally broke into India's A squad also soon after those hundreds and played a host of matches on tour in England and the West Indies. And then from there on, he went on to captain India in the Under-19 World Cup in 2004. India did extremely well in that tournament. They lost only to South Africa in the group stage and then to eventual champions Pakistan in the semi-final. In a game where Rayudu found himself suspended due to time wasting in the previous game versus Sri Lanka. So the disciplinary issues were pretty much there since Ambati's youth, you could say.
Yeah, I think he's a prickly person is maybe the best way of putting it. And I don't mean that in a particularly bad way or a good way. I just think that, you know, he's got his own views on things and he does things his own way. And that doesn't always come over perfectly for everyone else, right? So, I mean, you're right. That I think that's an extraordinary thing. I've forgotten about that. I can't remember if it was Ari or Estelle who found that nugget. But when I saw it, I was like, it almost feels unreal. Like it's like you would make up that backstory for a player like him.
Yeah. And on a side note, that under-19 Indian squad featured the likes of Shikhar Dhawan, Robin Uthappa, Suresh Raina, RP Singh, and Dinesh Karthik, of course, in addition to Ambati, and all of those guys went on to represent India and had pretty decent careers. And the Pakistan squad, actually, from that same semi-final, it had Fawad Alam in the squad. Fawad Alam, Abid Ali, Wahab Riaz, Zulkarnain Haider, and Riaz.
I get a WhatsApp message from him about every day. You know this.
I do not know that, actually.
He sends me WhatsApp messages all the time. I'll send some through to you.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about this one. It also, that squad, Pakistan squad, had Riaz Afridi, who was Shaheen's elder brother and did play a solitary test match. But given by the names in both of those teams, you know, you'd have to say India were the favourites to win that semi-final and Rayudu's absence probably cost them.
I mean, he didn't have a great tournament or anything, but it was a low-scoring game, that one, if I remember correctly. And, you know, having one more of their guns gives them a higher potential to make more runs, right? Like, you know, it's basic when you think about it that way. And so him not being there was quite a big deal. Probably just before under 19 cricket really gets huge in Asia. So I'm sure it was mentioned, but, you know, maybe if that happened now, that would probably, you know, be a huge news story. Whereas at that stage, I don't think it was quite as big.
Yeah, I think that's fair. At the same time, domestically, Rayudu was having troubles with his team Hyderabad as well. He did not see eye to eye with the Hyderabad Cricket Association and particularly the secretary of that association, Shivlal Yadav. Rayudu alleged that Yadav's son Arjun was receiving preferential treatment in that squad, and then he made the move to Andhra in 05-06, where he even had a run-in with Arjun in a Ranji game when he faced his old team. So that kind of tells you that Ambati Rayudu was kind of always a fiery character.
Yeah, and I, you know, it goes back to everything we've talked about so far. There's something about him that does rub people up the wrong way, and he was incredibly confident as well. I think, you know, he was thinking he was probably on the path to be the next Tendulkar, Dravid, that sort of level of player, and I think he had certainly a lot of confidence in his own ability, and he didn't suffer fools. Now, you could say there's always two ways of looking at that. You could say he was arrogant and he was an asshole, or you could say maybe there were fools around and he spoke up against them. You know, it depends on how you look at these things.
And I mean, knowing subcontinent culture, I very much believe that would have been happening, right? Because this preferential treatment thing is quite common, unfortunately. Maybe less so now, but back in that day, I mean, definitely more so. But weirdly enough, Rayudu returned to Hyderabad the next year, but he was still quite frustrated and unhappy. He was labeled hot-headed and emotional by his peers. And he was at that point where he even considered quitting the sport altogether. And that is when the ICL came calling, who needed Rayudu to draw in the crowds, because the BCCI had threatened all of their players that they would receive lifetime bans had they joined the IPL. And, you know,
ICL.
The ICL.
I think they were allowed to join the IPL.
Yeah, the Rebel League, the ICL, which we also did a Footmarks on. So you guys can go check that out as well. And, you know, Rayudu very well knew that joining this league would mean it will spell the end of his Indian dream. And he was 22 at this point and still hadn't played for India. But he didn't really bat an eyelid and kind of jumped on the opportunity and signed up. And he gave up that dream of representing his country. And that, you could say, was a huge moment in his career, wasn't it?
Yeah, it probably is the difference between him being Dinesh Kartik or even, I'm trying to think of someone else.
Suresh Raina?
Raina or Ajinkya Rahane, that level of player and the level he ends up at, right? We, you know, because it never quite washes off the ICL. And there are still people within the BCCI who are still quite upset that people got involved in that and everything else. So I do think it limits him as a player. And you look at that period. So he signs up in 2008. And if you look at that period between 2008 and 2012, that is kind of when the team starts to change. You know, Ganguly and Laxman, you know, Yuvraj is sick. All these things are happening. You know, Tendulkar's coming to an end, Dravid, blah, blah, blah. All these things, that's a pretty good time to be a young Indian player who's thought of as being one of the best young players in the country. And at that stage, he's either suspended and playing for a rebel league, or he's in a position where that happened really, really recently. And I do think it probably is the difference between him having a very good, solid international career and the one he ends up having.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And despite his reputation as this young batting superstar, Rayudu actually struggled big time in the ICL. And he was actually also one of the youngest members of an aged Hyderabad Heroes squad, which was coached by Steve Rickson, who even at that point was quite experienced. He had coached New Zealand, New South Wales, Surrey, which were all like huge jobs even back in the day. And in the finals...
Is he an assistant at Pakistan as well?
That's later.
Was that afterwards?
That's a mixed
Steve Rickon's had so many coaching jobs that, like, if we actually list them all, we both get dizzy. He's not always head coach. He's quite often an assistant coach as well. He's just everywhere at all times.
Yeah, I mean, he has a very decorated career. And he was fielding coach, actually, for Pakistan during Mickey Arthur's tenure. The first one, not the second one. And he quit that job because of payment issues. So there you have it. But anyway, coming back to our topic... in the 2008 ICL 20s Grand Championship, feels weird saying that out loud, Rayudu was the player of the match in both the finals, because the finals were like a series, like the World Series in Australia. And that is probably why he looks back to his ICL days positively and fondly, because he credits Rickson a lot for his personal development. And then he won a title as well. So you kind of get it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Rickson is, he'd be a fascinating piece to do one day, because he's, so many people have worked with him, talk so highly of him, and he's not famous. I think, you know, you've named most of the biggest jobs he had. Was he briefly the CSK coach as well,
yes.
I want to say?
Briefly.
Yeah, so like the assistant coach thing is probably what Steve Rickson is. And great assistant coaches quite often are great development coaches. That ability to find younger players and, you know, just upskill them and make them feel comfortable and everything else. And I think from all the discussions I've ever heard about Steve Rickson over the years, that feels like that's been his main role and what he's done absolutely best. Also, think about the squad, the Hyderabad Heroes squad situation that he was going into. You talked about the Hyderabad being aged, but like the entire league was aged, yes. Right? Like it's a really old squad, and he's got people like Inzaman Al-Haq, Chris Harris, Nicky Boye, you know, those sorts of guys were involved. What are you teaching them at that age, right? Like Inzaman was already 5 years past his prime by that point, right? He's probably be 60. And so it would make sense that a character like Steve Rickson would go to Raidu. And then you go to the fact that Steve Rickson is very straightforward, you know, is not probably a cookie cutter type of human being. And Raidu, probably the cheekiness of Steve Rickson probably is involved there. And if he was stuck in one cricket culture, Steve Rickson is an international cricket culture, Australian, but international cricket culture, because of all the places he's coached.
Yeah.
And all the stories he's got, right? Like, you know, he's reeling off stories about all the other players that he's been involved with, like, you know, the War Brothers and, you know, and all those sorts of guys. There's a different thing there. So I can understand why a young player would be like, well, this is what I want. And I do think, you know, I didn't get too much into it in the piece, but we do see that sort of really talented younger players who don't break through when their talent demands it, sometimes have other issues. You know, Hick, Ramprakash, Daryl Cullinan's another one. You know, you see these guys, and I don't think it's as big a deal with him, but I do actually think it does play a part in him maybe not becoming as rounded and as great a cricketer as he did. This is probably the first time he felt like he was playing representative cricket and top level cricket outside of the under-19s.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's actually very, very true, because back in the day, people did watch a lot of the ICL, and I'm trying to remember the Hyderabad Heroes team. Chris Harris was definitely there. I'm not sure if Inzaman was there because he was at the Lahore Badshahs, but Razak was. Abdul Razak.
Lahore Badshahs was second year though, wasn't it?
I remember.
Because I don't think there was a Pakistan team in the first year, and I think they brought them in second because that's my memory of that. So, but the point being is, like, it was old, and, you know, there was a lot of guys that were there who were not, you know. So, like, wait, I've just got the list up here. So, you got Jimmy Marr, Chris Harris, Stuart Binney, who was young.
Yes, Stuart Binney was one of the young players and who also did really well for the Hyderabad Heroes. I remember that.
Justin Kemp was there as well. And I'm just having a look at the Indian players. There was a few youngish Indian players, but no one has really gone on to have any sort of massive career by the look of this. Kaushik Reddy. I'm trying to think of anyone else here that went on to have a great career. So he had a bunch of senior players who, I mean, imagine what he would learn from Chris Harris and Justin Kemp and Abdul Razak and Jimmy Marr and Nicky Boyer and if Inzi was there for more than 5 minutes, all that sort of stuff. And then he's got this incredible coach. So you can see why it affected him. It's probably a very important age. And, you know, I remember talking to Nicholas Puran about similar sorts of things. Nicholas Puran wasn't in the West Indies side, but was already playing in Bangladesh. And he's like, you know, I'm getting to, this is the coach and these are the players. And he's talking to me about it like a school kid, right? Because for him, that was the time when he realized he could actually make it. And I think with Raidu, it was the same. It was just that he didn't really make any runs until the games that mattered. And then he did finally stand up.
Absolutely. When I first think of the Hyderabad Heroes, those are the guys, right? Chris Harris, Justin Kemp, Razak, and Binney in particular, because that's kind of the birth of Stuart Binney. Anyway.
I honestly think of Chris Harris as the face of the IPL, which might be why.
ICL.
Last.
You mean
ICL. Did I do? Did I do you? Yeah. It's too many letters in this.
It's contagious. But anyway, let's move forward. So when the BCCI granted amnesty to players who had participated in the ICL, Raidu was, you know, well known enough that he had the liberty to basically pick his team, and the offers on the table were from the Kolkata Knight Riders, the Mumbai Indians, and the Deccan Chargers. Rayudu went on to pick Mumbai, which is a bit of a shocker because Deccan Chargers were the Hyderabad team, which was kind of his home team. And also they were defending champions. So quite an interesting pick over there, which, you know, did ultimately prove to be fruitful.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts, and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, it'd be interesting for him to go through. I don't know if I've ever heard him talk about it in depth, how he ended up in that position. I suppose with Hyderabad and everything that was coming, maybe the talk of the team owners having problems with finances and the IPL itself played a part. But yeah, I think it tells you the talent that he had, that he was so widely sought off that three teams went after him, even though he hadn't really starred yet in T20 cricket himself. But yeah, I think it's an interesting call. I'm with you. I'm not surprised he chose something out of Hyderabad, though. I do think that, not that Hyderabad's a small town, but for him it was a small town, as in he was the young batting whiz kid out of there. I'm not surprised that he went, I want to try something different. But yeah, why it was Mumbai, who at that stage had not been particularly, I don't think they won a title at that stage, had they?
They hadn't.
I think it's a rogue call.
And I can also kind of see the angle where there's too much baggage with Hyderabad at this point in Raidu's head, right? So he's like, let's try something new. And the big city move also kind of makes sense. But during his time as a Mumbai Indian, Rayudu won a lot of silverware, including three IPL titles and two Champions League titles as well, and that too in just 7 years. But despite all of this, he wasn't looked upon as a superstar in that team, and he was even released in 2017 after a season in which he only featured in 5 games. That is when Rayudu made the move to Chennai, which is another massive IPL team. And one can say that that was probably the most important moment in his IPL career, because in his first season at CSK in 2018, Rayudu scored 602 runs at an average of 43 and a strike rate of 149, which was his best IPL season yet and ever, you know, eventually. And he was a destroyer of spin in the middle overs alongside Suresh Raina. And he hit the winning runs in the final that year as well, which helped CSK win their third title. So that is pretty much as fairy tale as it could get.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to his IPL career, it's actually really, really fascinating, because in 2010, he starts off and he averages 27 and a strike rate of 144. That's quite fast for that period, especially for a local younger player. And then he doesn't have another year where he strikes at over 140 in 2015. And there's a lot of years where he just didn't make a lot of runs. 2013, he averaged 19, right?
Yeah.
2017, he averaged 18. So when he was let go, he had a strike rate of 116 and was averaging 18. But you think about him as a player and you think about Wayne Keddie, it actually probably would make sense more for him to be playing for Kolkata or for Chennai, because those are the kind of wickets that his skills would have been at their, you know, the most important. And he does kind of, I mean, not, he doesn't really remake himself at the end. And he still had, there was 1 year, I'm just going to have to find it. Yeah, 17 matches in 17 matches in 2019. And he had an average of 23 and a strike rate of 93. So he still had years where he went completely missing. And again, I think, all things considered, it would be another fascinating thing to him to see if he got the most out of himself. So I just interviewed Barry Richards in the last week or so, 2 weeks, whenever it was, when I talked to Barry. And I would talk to it. Barry Richards is the poster child for a person who never got tested enough at the top level. And so we don't know. And he doesn't know how good he was.
Yeah.
And he would say things like, yeah, but if I played at the top level, you know, I would have turned more of my 50s into 100s because it was harder. And that's what I needed, was the challenge and everything else. But we do see players that are really talented, as I said before, have that sort of, if they get into the system too late, into the system that should be testing them, the game's kind of already put together. And, you know, one of the best examples of this is probably someone like Darren Lehman. Darren Lehman at 18 and 19, everyone thought he was getting the next big thing. He had a horrible season for Victoria. There were so many middle order players in Australia. He didn't really get in. And by the time he makes it as an Australian regular player, he's kind of, his game is no longer suited to, he's not adaptable to international, especially red ball cricket outside of Asia, right? And you see with Raidu, and he's at his best, it's like he can average 30 at a strike rate of 144. And that's ball, and that's batting in the middle overs in the days when people were blocking those overs around. And you think to yourself, what could he have been if he'd been developed better, if he, you know, if he'd got into the international cricket at what, 2008, 2009, started to move into there, how would he have developed differently? Because he really was, especially against spin, just absolutely world-class.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was his unique selling point, middle over spin basher, particularly in the IPL. But let's come back to 2018. He has that season for Chennai, 602 runs at an average of 43 and strike rate of 149. And then as a result of that recent success, plus good domestic numbers, he's back in the mix for India. And with the 2019 ODI World Cup looming, you know, Virat Kohli, then captain, goes public and makes a statement that Raidu will be the guy who would fix India's number four woes. Because that batting position, number four, was a big thing. I mean, they still kind of make it to be a big thing, even though we did an entire piece on how it's not. But at that time, it was, you know, a worry. And as you mentioned, in 2019, he had a poor run of form, that IPL, averaging 23 at a strike rate of 90-odd. And he was left out of the squad for all-rounder Vijay Shankar, who was termed as a three-dimensional cricketer since he offered a bit with bat, ball and in the field. And that prompted Raidu to post a cryptic tweet, which basically said that he had ordered 3D glasses to watch the World Cup on TV. And this is a guy who basically was never short of snark, was he?
No, and look, he's right. Vijay Shankar, I think, was a very good first-class player. And obviously, you know, as a limited overs player, was probably slightly limited in the way that he, you know, he went about it and wasn't going to have the same kind of impact. But you can also see why the selectors thought to themselves, well, if we're going to England, we might need a little bit of medium pace to be bold. You know, and you know, we want a slightly more rounded cricketer. But you can also see how the arrogance of Raidu that comes through when you're watching him bat is there when he's not batting as well, right? Yeah. And so he's willing to play his shots. But it's that kind of stuff, especially within Indian cricket, which there's no, I promise you, if Hardik Pandya has another year and a half, the way he's playing now, wait and watch the knives come out. Because behind the scenes, I've heard so many people bitch and moan about his attitude, his fame, his watches, whatever it is, right? All that sort of stuff. And Raidu, Srisanth, these sorts of guys, you know, Pambly, we've seen them come through before. If they don't quite fit and they're not, you know, they have harder times. And, you know, he probably doesn't see it that way, but that's exactly how the, you know, a lot of people involved with Indian cricket will see it.
Not just Indian cricket, by the way. I can tell you that social media chirp and banter, if you'd call it, or that sort of snark is not appreciated in Pakistan either. So it might just be a subcontinent thing, right? But to make matters worse, right, despite the BCCI naming Raidu as a standby player for that World Cup, India went with Rishabh Pant to replace opener Shikhar Dhawan and then also replaced an injured three-dimensional Vijay Shankar with uncapped opener Mayank Agarwal. It's crazy how that word three-dimensional or that phrase really caught on at that point and we're still using it, right? But as expected, that number four position did kind of come back to haunt India in that two-day semi-final versus New Zealand at Old Trafford. And perhaps, even though we can't say with any certainty, but perhaps, you know, a certain Ambati Raidu could have helped avoid that half hour of terrible cricket.
I mean, it would have been an upgrade on that, on their batting order if he's there. Yeah. It's not really the conditions that you expect him to be bringing in, but as we said before, you know, he made an under 19 100 against England when, I've got it here. I think it was at Taunton, was it? I know, I've lost it. I think it was at Taunton where he makes 300. They make 300. He makes 177 not out. And they won with a wicket to go. Might not have actually been the World Cup. Might just been games against England. But, you know, it would have been interesting to see how he is. But he would have been an upgrade in that position on pure batting talent, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what they needed on that particular day. And, you know, it would have been really, really fascinating to see how he would have gone. But they went in a different direction and they had a terrible season when it came, or it was a terrible World Cup when it came to their number fours. And they had a world-class number four that they didn't want to use.
Yeah. And someone who Virat Kohli had publicly backed, so I can understand the angst, you know, within Ambati Rayudu. And then, I'm sorry, I'm caught in a fix over here. Who made the term three-dimensional popular? Was it Mickey Arthur or was it the BCCI when they went for Vijay Shankar? Because now this is bothering me.
So there was a period which some people were talking about tools. So you would hear the phrase three-tool player. And three-tool player becomes 3D player somewhere between 2016 and 2018 off the top of my head, right? And three-tool is a baseball thing. So if you get a player who can come through in baseball, they call them five-tool players, which I think means you can throw, you can field, you can hit for average, you can hit for power, and there's probably something else that get on base, or maybe is the other one. I'm not sure. But yeah, and so it starts getting used in cricket. And then 3D comes off the back of that. So I'm assuming probably someone misheard three-tool or got confused with that and just went 3D. But yeah, those sorts of things, we've already always talked about that in cricket. And in some ways, having a phrase like that allows it to have a shortcut, which means it gets used more. It doesn't mean in cricket change rooms, they talk about those sorts of things a lot. Yeah. Oh, he's great, but he can't field, right?
I remember there was this one Australian cricketer, I can't remember who, but they were saying how someone like Inzamam, weird how he keeps featuring in this podcast, would not fit into Australia's cricketing setup because they look for at least two dimensions, not just the one. Or this was, well, way back in like 2010 or 2008, something like that. That's when I heard this. But
sounds,
anyway.
Sounds like a James Hopes conversation.
Anyway,
who these days is built a lot more like Inzamam, if we're being honest. He's been in a good paddock, James Hopes. But yeah, no, it's a very Australian thing to do that. I remember Usman Khawaja and Phil Hughes. There was a lot of talk about the fact that they were one-dimensional. They could give you the runs they gave you. They weren't particularly good with strategy. They weren't good with leadership and they couldn't field and they couldn't bowl. So it's something in Australian cricket that is talked about quite a bit of you need one other thing that you can be good at.
Yeah. Anyway, that phrase, three-dimensional cricketer, is probably not appreciated by Ambati Rayudu, if anyone. But coming back to his story, we've gone on quite a tangent over there. The World Cup snub triggered him to retire from all cricket, right? Domestic, international, IPL, everything. But then he did return to domestic cricket and the IPL shortly after. He played four more seasons with the Chennai Super Kings and won two more titles. In fact, in the 2023 IPL final versus Gujarat, he smashed Mohit Sharma for two sixes and a four. And he couldn't finish the game, which did upset him. But he did set Chennai up for an eventual victory, which Ravi Jadeja obviously got off the final delivery, quarter final. But this meant that Rayudu now had six IPL winners' medals, matched only by Rohit Sharma, and that is one hell of an achievement.
It's ridiculous. Do you know anything about Robert Horry, the basketballer?
I do. I do, actually.
Yeah. So Robert Horry is a player who, I was talking, my son started to get really obsessed with basketball, and he's going on about rings all the time. And I was like, I said, have you heard, can you tell me a player who played for Houston, LA, blah, 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 who's got seven rings? And he went through every star and he couldn't come up with it. And I said, no. And eventually I said, it's Robert Horry. And he said, Robert Horry's got seven rings? And I said, yes. Sometimes you're the perfect piece. And you go back to his career, Rayudu, and you think he never had to get paid a lot of money. And you had an Indian quality batter, not always a star, which is a separate thing, but you knew that there was a batter there at that sort of Ajinkya Rahane level, but you didn't have to pay him Ajinkya Rahane money.
True.
Right? It was very rare that you had to pay him that much money. He was also downgraded by the fact that he was good between overs 7 and 12, and they looked the worst on your strike rate. So no one was paying those guys probably. Suresh Raina is probably the only guy that got close to what he was worth, and even he should have been paid a lot more money considering what he could do, right?
Speaking of which, sorry I'm interjecting, but we should look up his true strike rates.
we should. And so you start to factor all that in, and you think to yourself, well, because of the ICL, because of the fact that people thought of him as a bad apple and an issue and all these sorts of other things, you do get to the point at which he is probably underpriced and undervalued, which means that if you have a good team, you can slot him in. On an average team, he probably doesn't do all that much, right? He's not raising your ceiling all that much. But what Raidu is really doing is raising your floor. And when you are in the playoffs, knowing that you have that kind of player available to you is so important. If Rashid Khan is bowling and you have an international quality player or spin that you can throw out there, that suddenly lessens the issue that you have. And if you haven't paid millions of dollars to get him on your side, so you end up with a Robert Horry type impact, right? And he's probably, he's more talented than Robin Horry, but you get these players in sports sometimes who sort of bounce around teams and win championships. And it's because they never get paid a lot of money, but what their specific skill is, they're probably in the top four or five, but it isn't something that is paid a lot of money to, or they've gotten a lot of attention. Or in his case, he didn't get the Indian bump that other players would because he didn't play enough, didn't play in a World Cup. Like if he played in one World Cup, right? If he played in that 2019 World Cup, or he could have been in the 2011 World Cup, right? 2015 or a T20 World Cup, and he'd had one blitzing World Cup, how much more money is he worth?
True.
Right? Because everyone in India knows who he is. And realistically, that never happens to him, right? He never hits that level of fame. He never even hits the like Ishant Sharma level of fame, or, you know, Umesh Yadav or anyone like that. And so if you're smart, those are the sorts of players that are really, really worth picking up in any auction in the world.
Yeah.
Right? The guys who are not quite the international quality level. And there was a county team a few years ago, who basically went, and Victoria have done this in the Shield cricket before, where they're like, well, we could go out and get the best young players, but then they're going to get picked for the national team. What if we get all the best players who are probably not going to get picked for the national team, right? Yeah. And it's slightly different in the IPL because of how those things work. But it's a similar kind of thing. If you can find two or three of those sorts of players that are really, really handy to you, you know, Sandeep Sharma, a perfect example of this. Sandeep Sharma is usually paid under his market value, right? And those sorts of players are really, really important. And Raidu is almost like the god of that. And the fact that he then picked two, or what was involved with two brilliant franchises, just allows him to get the extra titles. But the fact that those franchises went for a player like him also tells you a lot. Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our head, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers. Protect your computer now. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortballs or when rights issues try to dismiss me. Geo-block so you can watch all the cricket you want. Grab your NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Kimber.
Yeah, and I mean, he ended his IPL career on an absolute high, right? Mohit Sharma was having an MVP season. He was like a slow bowler from hell, and smashing him for 2 sixes and a 4 at a very crucial period, and then ending up with 6 winners' medals in the IPL, that's fantastic. But anyway, even after retiring from the IPL, he was setting precedents because he went on to become the first major Indian player to play in the franchise circuit, applying his trade in both the CPL and the ILT20 in this year that's just gone by. Or maybe if you look at it from a different lens, this current year, right? If you look at it from the summer. And the BCCI literally had to change the rules because of him, mandating a 2-year cooling off period for all retired players, as they suspected that Raidu would unretire again and then play the IPL. So that is some trailblazing stuff.
It just shows you that he doesn't really care about rules, which, you know, would make him a very good character in a movie. But yeah, I think it's really interesting. What I was told, and I kind of talk about a little bit in the piece, was that his plan was to retire from the IPL in 1 year, go and play. I think it was Major League Cricket was originally his big aim.
Originally.
Yeah, and he was going to play in Major League Cricket and then he was going to come back. And he's not the first Indian player I've heard to discuss this, because they all thought, well, okay, what if we just retire and then unretire? And he obviously went to the point at which the BCCI had to look into a cooling off period and everything else, because it was making a shamble of their probably now fairly pointless rule, but it made sense probably when the IPL was starting. And I think it's hilarious. And it just shows you the sort of brain that he has. And it kind of explains why he was such a good middle overs player, right? Like there is a you know, incredibly quick processing brain that he has that looks at things from many different angles. And that was just another example of him, thinking quite differently to everyone else. And also just, he's probably the first well-known IPL player who's become a franchise player. So that in itself is quite interesting, because you think about the sort of money that a lot of these Indian players get after they retire to open supermarkets and to work in offices and to go to events. Like, they get paid a fortune. I always go with open supermarkets because I always told that that is like the bread and butter. It's not supermarkets. I think that means shopping centers. But that sort of thing is like the bread and butter of an Indian player, a former Indian player. And he's like, no, I want to keep playing. Yeah. So there's something very interesting about that, because he is older, right? And he could have retired, and he clearly still loves the game and wants to be involved. He doesn't just want to, you know, be a commentator or do some coaching. He still wants to be out there scoring runs in the middle.
Well, you say that he is still 38, but he is doing some commentary, Hindi commentary in the ongoing IPL. So his story, you know, just keeps adding new chapters to it. But I have a question, and I was really curious about this, even when you brought it up in the group chat when you were researching for this piece. How did Raidu end up playing in the CPL and ILT20 with that 2-year cooling off period in place?
I still haven't worked out the exact thing, but my guess is that that 2-year ban was a threat. And what they were saying is, if you unretire again and come back to the IPL, then that will happen. So if you retire and you say you want to go and you want to go and play in another league, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe that there are gray areas and other ways of going around it. But what they are essentially threatening all these players with, because it's a non-compete clause, really. If that's the case, those players should be given gardening leave and should be paid by the IPL, right? If that's fine, then you have to match like 70% of my salary from the last 2 years for the next 2 years while I can't earn in any other league in the world.
You know who else should get gardening leave? Johnny Bairstow.
Hey, but too soon. But the point, I suppose, the point being at that is, I don't think they were really trying to suspend their players or cool off their players for 2 years. They just didn't want people to retire, unretire, and milk their system. So my guess is that is all it was a threat to try and get things back into order. And then he probably said, look, okay, what if I just stay retired? They're like, that's great. You can go play in these other leagues if you want. Yeah. Which, I mean, I can't see that's ever going to be a big deal, because if you're good enough to play in the IPL, you're never going to retire to go play in the CPL or the IL20 or any other league, right? It's really for those players who are probably on the fringe, but are well known enough, right, to be able to pay in those leagues. And in those other leagues, he'll get a premium.
Yes.
They will hope that people will watch him play more. I think I've seen enough to say that they probably won't, and it won't really change their numbers all that much. But teams certainly believe that it's worth it, and so they will do that. So it's... You know, he's a trailblazer again. And again, he's trying to get the best for himself. I mean, we've seen that all the way through his career. That's the job, right? That's the gig.
And I mean, you mentioned how he was underpaid during his stint in the IPL. So if he gets multiple premium contracts with other franchise leagues, that does make sense for him financially. And I mean, the only other Indian cricketer who I can think of who's played in franchise cricket outside of India is maybe Unmukt Chand, and he hasn't had nearly enough success as compared to Raidu, right? So I'll still call him that trailblazer. And
Unmukt Chand wasn't a star as a senior player. So we have seen under 19 players come through, right? But I think you would say it's very different for someone like Unmukt Chand in that kind of way. And if you look, I'm just looking at, there's a really good website that tells you all the money that they make. So he made 40 million rupees for about 4 years at Mumbai at his peak. When he went to CSK, he signed a deal for around 22 million a year. And then the last 2 years he was there, he signed a big deal for 60.
Ooh.
So he's, you know, so 6 crore is like his limit. You know, if you compare that to, I don't know, what, Ajinkya Rahane? give me someone else who you think is probably considerable level of talent, but is more famous. Is Rahane the good one?
Rahane is decent. Yeah, I think he works because he's still around.
So Rahane's had two 5 crore years, 2 7 crore years, an 8 crore year, and a 9.5 crore year.
Yeah, well, right? That's quite a stark difference.
Yeah, and so and you would say that Raidu's been a better IPL player than him.
True. Right?
But Rahane is Rahane. And everyone in India knows who Rahane is. And having him on your team means a lot. And, you know, he to go back to the 3D thing, Rahane has great hands. Rahane has leadership skills. Do you know what I, like, all those things do matter. But you could see why a player like him at the end of his career is like, what am I going to sign for the IPL? They're probably going to give me less than a crore if I come back for one more year. Maybe I might get 2 or 3 crore. Well, if I play in the CPL, I get to hang out in the beach for a little while. I get to make a couple of hundred grand there. Then I can pick up another league. But more importantly for him, he might be able to play 3 or 4 million years of some of those lower leagues, bounce around, and then be able to make far more. So it's in some ways, it makes a lot of sense. It's just not something we have seen from major Indian players so far. And he's on the fringe of a major Indian player, but he was at one stage, he was a regular in the ODI side. And, you know, casual fans may not know that much about him, but every cricket fan knows his career really well.
I mean, he's got 1,600 plus ODI runs. So I'd say that anyone who's followed cricket closely over the last decade and a half would know who Ambati Raidu is. And funny how the BCCI had this futile attempt at threatening him, because threats don't work with Ambati Raidu. That's literally why the title of the show is Do You, Raidu, because he does do him. That's all he does. He does as he wishes.
Also, I'll ask you this. How high up would you have him in the list of players who never played Test cricket?
Quite high. But yeah. I have to really think about this, though.
Yeah, it's, you know, there aren't too many players, and we're seeing more now, I think. And I'm not talking about guys who got injured or anything like that, but I'm talking about, you know, people who had proper professional careers. He really should have played Test cricket.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he would have been a star in it or anything, but he was of that level of talent that you would normally assume he would get a game. You know, you've got players like Glenn Chappell in England. He's another example of a player who, you know, probably in any other generation plays a test match.
Cosgrove ever get a test?
No.
I don't think
Mark Cosgrove is a good one.
Yeah,
Susie Bates and Stephanie Taylor are two other good ones when it comes to the women's game.
They didn't have an opportunity.
Oh, no. But I'm just saying, you know, there's a few. Yeah, Cosgrove plays 3 ODIs. Yeah, that's another very good one. There's a few Australians, although not as many as you think. Most of them eventually get in and play a game one way or another. Whereas, you know, it's kind of remarkable that he didn't. And I think if he hadn't have gone down that ICL path, he probably does. Jamie Siddons is another good Australian one, by the way, off the top of my head.
Yeah. We'll have to do a Footmarks on this someday, or maybe a Crick Picks. That's a really good Crick Picks, actually.
It might be a good Crick Picks. The only problem with that is there would be so many players we would say that no one has ever heard of. And that's the reason no one's ever heard of them, because they didn't play a test match.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway. Just to conclude then, Jared, can we say that Ambati Raidu, you know, based on everything that we've discussed in this podcast, would you say he has the most wild modern-day cricketer arc in the world? Because I know that back in the day, there's some wild arcs. You're going to bring up Aubrey Faulkner and no one's ready for that. So modern-day cricketers, wildest arc, Ambati Raidu?
Yeah, I think, how do you compare it to people like Azhar Ali and Steve Smith? Who are really, really interesting ones. I mean, especially you put Steve Smith and the sandpaper in.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, Warner's arc is pretty crazy too.
That's true.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's probably more like the kind of arc, though, you did see in the 70s and 80s. You know, the Kerry Packer, the Rebel cricket days, where you had these incredibly talented players, but they weren't quite automatically going to have careers for their nations. And so they were set off on this wild path. And then in his, he comes back into the mainstream. And then even when he's at the mainstream, he still finds a way to annoy them at the end. I think he's definitely, it's one of the stranger professional careers, especially because if he comes along 2 years later, almost none of this would have happened to him.
That's true.
Right? Like he would have, if he comes along a couple of years later, he's probably what, more in that Virat Kohli age bracket. So he would have been in Virat Kohli's shadow straight away. He would have started in the IPL because of the age he would have been. And he probably would have had he probably would have played more international cricket. So it would have been a fairly normal career, but he doesn't do normal, as you said. Yeah. He kind of does it his way.
He is like Loki. He prefers chaos. And that's basically the theme of this entire arc. And that pretty much wraps it up. I'm curious to see what he does here on, because the story isn't over yet. Maybe in 5 years' time, we are doing an updated podcast on Raidu, but...
His skills, if T20 cricket changes and becomes a hitting sport, he might struggle a little bit, right? Just because he's not, probably at his age, not going to be able to do that. But there are certain players, and I've probably talked about this with you before, but someone like Colin Ingram, I remember Colin Ingram sort of saying, you know, play a couple more years and I'll retire. And I was like, don't do that. I said, because you're a left-hander who can bat from one to six. There aren't many left-handers who can bat in multiple positions. Mm. You could play forever. You can always, you're always become a coach when you can become a coach. And you see someone like Rydoo, and it's the same thing. The skills that he has are probably always going to be necessary somewhere, right? And then who knows how many other Indians with a social media following are going to play in these other leagues. Yeah. So I kind of hope that he does play 3 or 4 years and, you know, we see him in random leagues and he's in, you know, in the European League 1 year, not the ECN, but the European League 1 year, and he plays a season in Zimbabwe and he does all sorts of random stuff. It would kind of be peak him. And then he becomes like this, you know, Herschel Gibbs level coach where no one can quite work out how he became a coach, but it's kind of awesome that he's a coach and all that sort of stuff. I think it could be fascinating.
Bring him to the PSL, break the internet. But anyway, you guys, whoever are still with us, viewers and listeners, let us know in the comment section below what you think of Ambati Rayudu's career and what you think will come of it, because clearly it's still ongoing. And if you enjoyed this episode, do give us a like on YouTube and subscribe to both this YouTube channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. And if you want to, you know, have a one-stop shop for all of our writing and videos and podcasts, you should go to goodareas.co. Bookmark that website because you can find all of our work there. That's all for this episode for Footmarks. We'll be back with another episode next week. Have a good one, folks. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.